The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Wrestling to the Max. SmackDown. Review.
And we are live to the W2M Network with the Wrestling to the Max SmackDown Live Review for Tuesday, July 17th, 2018. Good evening, afternoon, morning, whenever you're listening to this, really. I'm your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Welcoming back the co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi.
Hello.
And... No, I can't do that because that'll get me in trouble with the political people.
Oh, God. Now you're going to have to tell me what you wanted to say later.
Yeah, me too, because now I need to know.
I was going to call you the Donald to my Bernie.
Oh, how dare you?
That's just rude.
Yes.
He's Brandon Biscoving. You'd think I'd be nicer to you, what with Fox Sports and watching.
Yeah, exactly. Look at all the things I've given you.
You'd think, but you'd think incorrectly.
You can watch CFL and Braves games because of me.
For those of you wondering, the CFL is the Canadian Football League, and yeah, that's because I have too much free time on my hands. You know who else has too much free time on their hands? The SmackDown writers. Although, technically speaking, these last couple of weeks, they've had a relatively coherent show, and for that, I am appreciative.
I miss NFL Europe.
What was it, like Europa League or something like that, I think?
I think it was just called NFL Europe.
There was another spiffy name for it, too. Oh, but okay. Anyway, with that being said, what do you say we get into this week's SmackDown Live review?
Let's do it.
All right, we are...
Before this becomes a show of the kickoff.
Coming back August 9th. Chill. Anyway. Thank you for the cheap plug, Brandon.
You're welcome.
Anyway. We are a presentation of the W2M Network available online at W2Mnet.com. In addition, you can find the W2M Network family of podcasts wherever you listen to your podcasts, such as iTunes, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spreaker, Podbean, CastBox, YouTube, a host of whole other places. And Brandon, guess what?
What?
I hear something's coming.
Yes, Spotify is coming soon.
And Glacier is following it.
That's a reference that's a reference that like four people who watch WCW will get, and nobody else, and that's fine by me.
That's fine because it's an inside joke for all the past WCW fans.
All right, let's get to this then. We open this week's episode of SmackDown with Jeff Hardy proceeding to have a seizure. Oh, nope, just doing his ring entrance. Never mind. He makes his way down to the ring and talks about what happened at Extreme Rules on Sunday when Shinsuke Nakamura hit him in the no-no places and then proceeded to give him a kick off right as the bell rang to take the U.S. title. Jeff has invoked his rematch clause for this evening, and we get that match as our main event. He promises to make Nakamura obsolete and take back his title. Nakamura is interviewed backstage where he says that he enjoys the sad clown crying and he's going to make him do it again later tonight. God bless America. Your thoughts on our opening segment, Liz?
It was pretty entertaining. But I'm really, I can't think of anything bad to say about it. So that's always positive because we know I'm generally cranky about everything. I've been enjoying, been enjoying him for a few months now. So I thought it was a good setup for what we were going to get.
Brandon?
Let me just say face painted eyes and then the shadow eyes or blank eyes or whatever you want to call them. Jeff Hardy is really creepy.
God, yeah.
And so I guess he's becoming broken or woken or whatever they're going to call it for Hardy now.
Well, he did threaten to make Nakamura obsolete.
Obsolete. But yeah, we'll talk about this more later, but you know, this was a good little promo, a good little thing. I hate the WWE ring. I told you guys while he's not being as overt as some other people are. Heel Nakamura is definitely starting to go into that realm of stereotypical Japanese anti-American dude.
I don't think we saw enough of it tonight in order to make that distinction. The God Bless America thing, while very tongue-in-cheek, it's something that we've seen done before, and it's Nakamura's way of very slowly and very efficiently rubbing it in the faces of everybody after he hit Jeff in the balls Mahoney.
True.
I'm being told I can't say balls Mahoney. I must refrain from saying no. Liz, anything else?
Yeah, remind me to ask you offline about this stupid thing that balls Mahoney you're not supposed to say because Brandon did it yesterday too. But no, nothing else on anything important.
It's a Joey Styles joke from One Night Stand 2005.
Oh, that's right. You explained it to me. Okay.
And all of our inside references.
Since you guys both got a kick out of no-no places earlier in the broadcast, I figured I'd bring that in full circle as well. Contest scheduled for one fall. And are you happy, Brandon? They're finally doing something with Andrade Almas.
No. Bad.
Yeah, but we hadn't even seen him on television for like 7 weeks prior to him beating
Thank Sankara. God.
Okay, you can hate Andrade all you want to. He's freaking awesome. And this match with AJ Styles proved it here. These guys go 16 minutes, approximately 12 of which was shown. AJ Styles does pick up a submission victory with the calf crusher over Andrade again, almost. But this did more than enough to show that Andrade can hang with the main event players on this Tuesday night Blue Brands.
At least Liz, did it by himself.
Liz, what were your thoughts on this match before Brandon tries to bury Andrade like he does during the NXT reviews?
It was a good match. I didn't see him in, you know, NXT, as we all know. And the both of you have been going back and forth for weeks trying to convince me one way or the other on him, because when he first popped up in the draft, I had some thoughts about how his gimmick seemed. But I haven't seen enough of him to really make an opinion. I mean, he did put on a good match. But I personally would want to see more of him before I go, oh yeah, he deserves to be in, you know, the title hunt going after AJ. I'm not saying he doesn't, and I'm not saying, okay, well, you know, don't put somebody that, you know, I don't know, you know, in it. But for me, I thought he was good, but I don't really know a lot of his backstory to comment on that. But I mean, it was a decent match.
I'm not saying that Andrade needs to be the SmackDown Live champion right now, because he doesn't. He needs more time to establish himself. I'm just saying that this is a good first step to people who are uninitiated with Andrade to see just exactly what he's capable of, him taking AJ Styles to the limit here. Brandon, go ahead, bury the guy. You know you want to. I don't know why.
Well, because, here, you want me to explain exactly why? Why I don't like Almas?
Omega.
Well, because that's part of it. That's part of it. He has two of the most annoying gimmicks, at least in my opinion, rolled up into one.
One of them's Alberto Del Rio.
Yes, one of them is the very stereotypical, just bland Mexican wrestler. And the other is that he has to use, you know, especially in today's WWE, he has to use a valet to basically do all the work for him. This match, I'll give him credit. It wasn't that sort of match. or Vega did not get involved whatsoever. But I know it's asking a lot for WWE, which, you know, where their go-to for any, foreign wrestler, face or heel, is to play off of their heritage and everything. But if, and for those of you who don't understand the reference, go watch some of both of their past stuff, and just know that they have a history together. If Almas was more of his Japanese counterpart and less like Alberto Del Rio, I may like him some more.
Okay, for those of you who are wondering about Brandon's vague podcasting here, he's referring to Los when he was in Los Single Nobles, yes, in New Japan.
Yes.
This is a completely different character now.
Not really. He still uses, yes, Tranquilo. Really. He still does the whole, resting on the ropes and everything like Naito does.
But that's not specifically who his character is. His character is that he is motivated by Zelina. She helped bring his career back full circle. He allowed himself to get too lackadaisical, too Tranquilo. She brings out the aggressive
side. No, I get that. That's why I don't like Almas. If Almas had his old character, if Almas had his old character and was more, and like once he turns face and he becomes, basically the Mexican Tetsuya Naito, I'd be perfectly fine with him, as long as he stuck with that above anything else and didn't rely on, being very stereotypical.
I'm pretty sure that like half the people listening to this have no idea what the hell a Tetsuya Naito is.
He's the man. That's all.
B, we're frustrating Liz, so we're about to move on here. But
no, I'm just trying to figure out who actually listens to us. I didn't think anybody did, so.
B, I think you need characters like Almas on your roster. I think Almas is going to be one of those guys who brings out the best in the people around him, much the same way that he did in NXT. Almas is a guy who can be put in the ring with anybody and put in a good match. The reason the Sin Cara matches worked is because they have a history against each other. Back when Almas was still in, back when Almas and Sin Cara were still back in Mexico as La Sombra and Incognito, respectively. This is the opportunity for these guys to continue to make names for themselves. And using this match with AJ Styles here, even though Almas does not win this match, is an opportunity to elevate Almas to that next level on SmackDown, into that upper mid-card tier, which SmackDown so desperately needs right now.
So before we move on, Brandon. Before we move on, I'm not disagreeing with what you say, Harry. I completely understand it, and I am giving like the guy the benefit of the doubt. I don't know any of his backstory. NXT, TNA, Japan, wherever the hell he was, I don't know anything about him. I have not yet Googled him or watched any of his other matches. I will go do that though, but I can see Brandon's point because I am very picky about so many gimmicks that they recycled to some degree. The Del Rio was a Mexican guy who had a valet, granted it was a guy, even like the No Way Jose, Lemon guy, stuff. It really has to work to prove itself to you. So I'm just saying, I can see Brandon's point, but I understand what you're saying, too.
I would give you No Way Jose and Adam Rose. Aldo Rose on the independent. Adam Rose on the W. I'll give you No Way Jose and Adam Rose, but I think that Almas is different enough from Del Rio that the comparison isn't necessarily as apt as it was. Moving on, we go backstage. Liz, do you know what day it is?
It's Rusev Day.
It's Rusev Day. And after a really well-done performance by Rusev against Styles at Extreme Rules in a match that the fans were definitely invested in, and I'll let you guys ask your live questions a little bit later on in the show since we're already into the flow of SmackDown here. Aiden English is shown approaching Lana, who has apparently lost her accent over the course of the last couple of weeks here on SmackDown.
Good. Hey, at least she's not flip-flopping back and forth.
Yeah, it's not like she could stay in the character anyway, so the fact that the accent's gone is probably for the best.
Mm-hmm.
The promo, actually, the backstage segment between these two is really good, I thought, because it definitely helps continue the character motivations for both English and Lana. Lana wanted English away in the first place, but on behalf of Rusev, allowed English to stay. But now that English has cost Rusev the heavyweight title with his involvement in the championship match at Extreme Rules, exposing the turnbuckle that Rusev went into before the Springboard 450 and the phenomenal form for the finish, Lana is a lot more hesitant to allow Aiden English to be around Rusev, whereas Aiden English is just looking to make amends for screwing up the way that he did on Sunday here. What were your guys' thoughts on the segment? I personally really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it because, you know, I have a feeling that, you know, we talked about it before and then it kind of died down again. But I definitely think that this feud between those two is going to be the impetus for how Rusev Day will break up. And they've already kind of teased it, and maybe this may be part of why the accent's kind of going away, and maybe in part because, you know, she just can't keep it up. But I also think that part of the reason why the accent is going away is that, and they kind of teased this, what was it, last week or the week before last when they had the Glow people on? Where they were like, you two, you know, talking about Lana and Naomi, you two have more in common than you know. I think they're trying to slowly, they're doing a slow face turn for both Lana and Rusev, I think.
Liz, any thoughts to add to this?
I thought it was a good segment. I kind of think her accent came out, just the fake accent came out a little bit every time she said Rusev.
Mm-hmm.
But I was glad to see it go too, because especially with all her social media stuff, and she obviously doesn't do it on Total Divas, it's been long since time for it to go away. But no, it was a good segment. I'm interested. I hate to see them, you know, break it up. But it will be what it will be. I mean, and we'll just see how it plays out.
I definitely feel like there's more of a story to tell with Rusev in English rather than just rushing to a breakup here on the account of Rusev being as over as he is. I think that there's a tag team story to still tell there, and their tag division on SmackDown is one of the stronger divisions the WWE's had in a while, and adding another team such as Rusev in English into that tag team division would do both of them well in order to keep them active, in order to give another pair of bodies to the tag division, even though we already have teams that don't get to appear on SmackDown on a weekly basis. It is, i.e. Cesaro and Sheamus, who once again were in the dark match for this episode of SmackDown. I feel like you could have them in your tag team division and keep them together a little bit longer here rather than just rushing to a breakup here.
I think that's probably what will happen, is that these two will be in the tag division for a little bit, but then they'll continuously losing, with Aiden being the reasoning for why they lose, thus, after a while, ending up resulting in the breakup.
Our next contest, scheduled for One Fall. I was waiting for Liz to chime in with one.
Is Becky She's finally gotten used to it after doing Raw so much.
I was finally able to time it properly, so I like wasn't so far off, Brandon.
Is Becky Lynch taking on Mandy Rose? A quick match between these two ladies, 3.5 minutes to be precise, as Becky Lynch taps out Mandy with the disarm her. Post-match, Becky has an interview talking about the fact that she's been on a roll here, and she's coming for Carmella because she wants to be the SmackDown Live Women's Champion again. Paige backstage meets up with Carmella and tells Carmella that she's going to be facing Becky next week on SmackDown. Carmella demands it be non-title. Paige agrees and then says that if Becky wins next week on SmackDown, though, then Carmella will defend her SmackDown Live women's title against Becky at SummerSlam. Liz, I'm going to start with you here, since I started with Brandon for the first segment here. Your thoughts on where we're going with the women's division here? First of all, the cluster that was the Carmella-Asuka match at Extreme Rules.
I mean, I know everybody is furious that, you know, Asuka was built to be this unstoppable, you know, force. And I see no reason why she's so stupid when it comes to, you know, James there. I didn't like that match. I was never, I get the appeal of Carmella to many, but she's never been my cup of tea. I'm not saying I dislike her. I'm not saying she's awful. She's certainly not one of the best. She does have our entertainment factor. But yeah, the pay-per-view match was ridiculous and insulting the fans on many levels. But I guess it's entertainment, and that's what it's all about. Right. As for last night's match, I was happy to see Becky win. And hopefully Becky will win the title. Can we get that lucky?
Brandon, let's talk about the elephant in the room here, the soon-to-be-returning Charlotte.
I have a feeling that Charlotte will probably have some other match at SummerSlam. And then I have a feeling that Becky will probably win the title at SummerSlam, and then they'll feud over it in the fall. You don't want my thoughts on the Extreme Rules match, Harry?
Don't do it, Harry. We did a podcast on that, Harry.
I'm pretty sure if people want to hear your thoughts on it, they can hear it in long form.
Yeah, but you asked Liz. You know that you're not going to get a complete storm from Liz.
Yeah, I also know that I don't want this to be a two-hour freaking podcast, Brandon.
Fair enough.
R-Truth meets up with Ty Dillinger backstage. Dillinger says to spare him the motivation speech. Truth appears like he's trying to give him one anyway, and Dillinger is fired up. We then find out that Truth was on his headset talking to his mama because somebody called his mom. Oh, wait, that was Ernest Miller, my bad. And Brodus Clay. Never mind. Anywho. Ty Dillinger takes on Samoa Joe up next, which, by the way, it's scheduled for one fall.
One fall.
It's actually scheduled for one murder, and the victim is Ty Dillinger.
Hey, at least Ty got. Hey, at least Ty got some offense in the beginning of the match.
I'm sorry, Liz. What was that? Scheduled for one murder?
One murder. Yeah.
A minute and 45 seconds, to be precise. Until Samoa Joe, well, to borrow a line from his TNA days, kills a bitch dead. Poor Ty was mid-30s. Speaking of funerals, segue! The Miz hosts Team Hell No's funeral. For those wondering, Kane actually suffered a legitimate injury on the Go Home episode of SmackDown, which is why you shouldn't be having people wrestle on Go Home! Kane messed up his Achilles tendon, putting him in the walking boot, thus the reason they did the angle that they did. I had the Bludgeon Brothers retaining anyway, regardless. Miz talks about the fact that, well, first he sneaks in a plug for his show and his MVP performance in the Celebrity All-Star Softball game, which, by the way, total Miz, spectacular asshole.
I'm disappointed I missed it.
I'm working on finding it so I can watch the
game. I tried to find it on Watch ESPN, but apparently they didn't put it up. If you find it, let me know.
I will do. YouTube has the actual Home Run Derby up, though, if you're interested.
Oh, okay.
I'll give you the link once we're done here. Anywho, Liz is like, uh-huh, sure, okay, yeah. Makes sense.
No, I actually want to see it myself. I do like baseball, but I was actually looking at Instagram while YouTube were going on about it.
So Miz talks about how, while Kane and Bryan were a good team 5 years ago, they have become terrible friends, once again bringing up the fact that Kane attacked Bryan back in 2014 after winning the titles. He then says that Kane nearly ended Bryan's career and that the Bludgeons ended their career as a tag team. He asks for a moment of silence, which the fans do not oblige, instead greeting him with a yes chant, which Miz spectacularly plays off by saying, yeah, that probably would have been the better thing to ask for, and then stating that he told us so. He goes on a rant about how Bryan has constantly failed. And the fact of the matter is that ever since Bryan got cleared to return to the ring back in March, his run in the WWE has done nothing but destroy his legacy and that his career is dead. Bryan's music hits. He looks like he's going to be coming down the ramp. So the pallbearers of the funeral try to block his way. Instead, Bryan comes through the crowd and attacks Miz. The pallbearers try to make the save, and Bryan opens a can on all three of them, including the Baisuku knee strike to one of them, pointing at Miz as Miz has escaped up the ramp to end the segment. Brandon, I start with you. What were your thoughts on Miz? Oh, I guess technically this would be Miz TV.
Yeah, this was Miz TV funeral edition. But, I mean, it wasn't bad. It's basically what you expect from Miz, and it's definitely there to set up the, you know, forthcoming feud between Miz and Bryan. You know, I was okay with it.
Liz?
I love the fact that as he was walking down the ramp, he was shaking hands with people.
Oh yeah, that was great.
that was fabulous. It was silly. It was campy. You know, setting up the feud. It wasn't the worst thing they've ever done. I actually enjoyed it.
It was weird having a mannequin head with the Kane
mask
on.
That was a little creepy.
That was a spectacular touch, though. Honestly, the fact that Miz came off like such a grade A asshole here is what makes this segment work.
Oh yeah,
it was great. Yeah,
I know that SmackDown is the house that AJ Styles built, but I'm pretty sure that Miz is taking up residence. Our next contest scheduled for one fall. Is Eric Young taking on Kofi Kingston, and we see Eric Young pick up a win for Sanity here. That's two in a row. What the hell?
Huzzah.
Sanity, sanity, sanity. As Eric Young picks up the win in this match with Young Blood, not called such by Tom Phillips. You disappoint me, Phillips. The Wheelbarrow Neckbreaker at 9.5 minutes, about six of which was aired. Liz, they're finally starting to do something with Eric Young and Sanity here. What are your thoughts on the group now that you're starting to get a kind of an idea of what they're capable of? First on the kickoff show in the tables match against New Day, and now here in this particular one-on-one singles contest.
Actually, I was quite familiar with them out of anybody at NXT because I have a friend who was very much into them. So they were always forever posting clips or talking about them. You know, Sanity, SmackDown's kind of interesting because the tag teams are so, I think, diverse, you know, in a sense. And like you were saying earlier, there's a lot of, you know, pretty strong tag teams. It was a decent, you know, match. I'm not going to lie, I missed part of it. So either it was very quick or I missed a lot of it. No, I like them. I'm interested to see, you know, more of them and what is really next for, you know, New Day. I don't see them feuding with Sanity all that long.
I wouldn't be surprised to see the finish come into this here after we had Xavier Woods thrown into Kofi Kingston, leading to the Young Blood neckbreaker here. Brandon, your thoughts on the finish and the match itself?
Yeah, I mean, the match itself was good. The finish, you know, it's good to see Sanity getting more wins and starting to get some momentum. In terms of how this goes, I'm very worried that it ends up being that, like, you know, Sanity continues to beat them, starting some dissension and some chaos within New Day, and that they get a win at SummerSlam, leading to, you know, a bit of a breakup.
Good.
No.
Good riddance.
No.
It has run its course.
I don't think New Day's ever going to break up. I think they're going to
hope not.
Evolve a little bit into something, you know, more where they're still a faction of sorts, but not necessarily so focused on tag teams. I do not see them breaking them up
Yeah, I would say sometime. Yeah, I don't know who exactly you could add, and maybe it's a bit too late to do this, and you could probably do it with three still, but either add a fourth or just have them become basically like the Four Horsemen were in the later days, like in 97 of WCW, where they're still technically together, but they don't always have to come out together. It's just, you know, three individuals who are together in a faction, but are their own people separately at the same time, and have them go after some individual titles.
I'm pretty sure you just called Big E Mongo McMichael, and frankly, that's not nice.
I did not call him Mongo. He would not you be said, Mongo. He would be, well, I guess the mid-90s. Well, no, Arn was still in.
Arn wasn't wrestling. Arn retired in 96.
Yes, yes. Technically, you are correct. But it was still technically Flair, Mongo, Arn, and he who shall not be named.
Well, there's also that J-E-double-F, ha ha, J-A.
No, that does not, no, he does not count. He was the fifth wheel. He was the fifth wheel of the Four Horsemen.
He was a horseman in the 90s. I think you just called Kofi Jeff Jarrett.
No.
You did. Just accept it.
Jeff Jarrett was not an official part of the Four Horsemen to me.
Okay, knowing what we know about the main event, Brandon, I kind of want to throw a stat at you here. You ready for this?
Okay.
The male winners on tonight's episode of SmackDown Live. Are you ready?
Yep.
AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Eric Young, Jeff Hardy. Welcome to Tuesday Night Impact.
Yeah.
Our main event, scheduled for one fall.
One fall.
Is for the United States Championship in a rematch as Shinsuke Nakamura defends his title against Jeff Hardy. Shinsuke goes for Balls Mahoney early in the match, but does not connect. His Hardy flies into it. Accept it, Liz. It is what it is. A little bit later on in the match, Kinshasa gets countered into the... I heard a groan when I made the Balls Mahoney joke.
No, it wasn't for that. I'm sorry. I actually don't feel well. So I was covering my mouth.
Later on in the match, Kinshasa is countered into a twist of fate. Jeff goes up top and barely hits the Swanton, by which I mean he curse splatted onto Shinsuke. It looked rough.
Randy Orton, that's because of the rumor that's going around about his back. I think he's trying to protect himself.
We'll talk about that in a second, Brandon. Don't worry, I'm getting there.
Okay.
Randy Orton arrives for the disqualification, allowing Shinsuke Nakamura to retain the U.S. title in 17 and a half minutes. Let's first talk about the post-match, where Orton beats the absolute dog shit out of Jeff Hardy.
Brandon,
hold on, I'm getting there! Don't steal my thunder!
Okay.
Somebody needs a Xanax.
It's been a long day. We still have a 205 Live review to do after this, too.
Go ahead, Harry.
Thank you. Brandon?
Yes?
You guys know that I went to IWA Mid-South this year to do King of the Death Matches.
Yes.
King of the Death Matches is a show where blood is guaranteed in every single match.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing that I saw at King of the Death Matches disgusted me as much as what I saw on Tuesday night.
And that's saying something, because those death matches can get crazy.
What the fuck, Randy? For those of you wondering what I'm talking about, my verbal description is not going to do this justice. Jeff Hardy has gauged ears. He likes those big earring loops, which means he has like these gigantic holes in his ears. Basically, you could hang like Christmas tree ornaments in them. Randy Orton decided to use that as his own personal grip when he pulled Jeff Hardy up off of the ground. A draping DDT off the announce table to the floor was the icing on the cake. But yeah, Randy, seriously, sanitizer, bro. That was disgusting.
Yeah, that was painful to watch. But, I mean, I've been saying it for a long time. I mean, when Sheamus had that giant septum ring hanging out from his nose, I was just like, that's just a giant target for someone to just yank.
Liz?
I screamed in grossness as it happened, and that's, you know, not you know, it takes a lot for me to react. I have a pretty strong stomach. I'm not really too squeamish on some things, but I definitely had a reaction to that, and it wasn't a good one. So gross.
Yeah. Ugh.
At a loss for words, rough. Hey?
It takes a lot to leave me speechless.
Yeah. That was painful to watch.
Could this be a sign towards more edgier content going forward, though? Because let's be honest, there was nothing PG about what Randy did.
We say this every time that something like this happens. Granted, this isn't during WrestleMania season, so maybe, you know, this is a bit of a sign. But considering they're trying to get some of the MMA fan base that they lost back in the Attitude Era back for SummerSlam and Rousey, maybe that's why they're doing it now. But we say this whenever they do something like this, and then, you know, a month or so later, or even the next week, they're back to their very campy, cartoonish ways. So, I'll believe it when I see it. I'll believe it when they're consistent. But, you know, one can only hope. Would I like to see it? Absolutely. Do I think it'll happen? I'll believe it when I see it.
This same question, do you think this is a attempt to veer towards edgier content on the Blue Brand?
I mean, I don't know, because I was wondering, like, was it planned or was this like a spur-of-the-moment thing on Randy's part? So, I don't know. It'd be nice to see some things, you know, a little edgier, but I don't know. I mean, some things are just so random in one walk, it's really hard to say.
I mean, this is, I could use the example of the AJ attack on Shane back pre-Mania a couple of years ago with him throwing him through the glass. You know, that would have, you know, had the same kind of effect where we would have been like, oh, is this them trying to, you know, get more towards towing that line? But then, you know, a couple of weeks later, they were back to where they were. So, you know, one moment does not necessarily mean that they're gonna, you know, fully move towards edgier all the time. It seems like they kind of try to sprinkle these in to make the Attitude Era fans happy.
Do you think they went too far here, Brandon?
No, absolutely not, because, you know, it works, especially with Orin's character, and especially if he's trying to become, you know, if he's trying to be this very sinister, you know, viper type, you know, guy, you know, it works for him. Because, like I said, when Sheamus had the septum ring a couple of years ago, I always said to myself, I was like, that's just a giant target just waiting for someone to just have the balls Mahoney to pull it out or do something to it. And he'd be in so much pain that he could get an easy win. And it would be a very, you know, classic heel move of, you know, aiming at the weakest point. And that's exactly what Randy did with this. So, you know, it works. It definitely works.
Liz, you have a different perspective coming from a background in the medical field.
I think it's unsanitary and unsafe, and I was waiting for his ear to rip, and I think sure people might get stupid ideas, but it's probably been done by a thousand other people before. I honestly, the way he was pulling it, I was like, oh my god, his ear is going to snap. I honestly did. It was like very, very stretched out. but did they go too far? No, I don't think so. I mean, you see worse things on, you know, television, you know, really. So I don't think they went too far. I don't think we're going to be seeing something like that every, you know, week, though.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to see it all the time, but I mean, I'm sure they had a way to do it to where, you know, they knew how far, he knew how far he could go and everything with it. You know, it's, you know, while yes, wrestling's a little different because it's, you know, live and everything, you know, you can pull off so many things. That's why I've said, you know, for a while now, you know, with technology the way it is and all of that, and especially because, you know, WWE holds no qualms about it saying, you know, yeah, our product is purely entertainment, you know, it's not real, all of that, yada, yada, yada. You know, they did it before with the Shane jump, both of his jumps having bags underneath the, airbags underneath the tables. You could do a ton of the, you know, more edgy spots that you did back in the Attitude Era, in a safe way nowadays. I know they won't do it, but you could easily bring back headshots, with them using, you know, some other type of chair and just have, like, the sound effect go off or something like that. You know, you could do it if you really wanted to.
Yeah. And that officially brings a wrap to this week's episode of SmackDown Live here. Scale of 1 to 10, Brandon.
Excuse me.
I'll give it a 7.5. You know, the main event was great, and the ending, you know, it definitely set something up, although I'm not sure. This may be, in part, a way to let Jeff have some time off to heal his body. But definitely a very interesting feud that you can do a lot with once he comes back with Orton. You know, seeing Sanity getting a win was good. And yeah, you know, just a good overall show.
Liz?
You know, I enjoyed the show. I think they set up a few things. They made you think about a few things. You know, who's AJ's next contender, the guy he was wrestling, you know, where they were going with Aiden and Rusev. You know, it was really good. The whole Randy thing is kind of random because, you know, he's going after Jeff and not, you know, Shinsuke. So maybe I missed something, you know, somewhere. Who knows? So I am going to give it a 7.75.
My number is the exact same as Brandon's at a 7.5. Which apparently deciding to show us up a little bit tonight, thankfully.
You have to go listen to Brandon. And
we started this. I'm sorry, Harry.
I don't do quarter stars.
Brandon and I do. We started on Raw, so I wanted to see what your reaction would be. Yeah, no, 7.5 is pretty much what I was giving.
Even when I do my star ratings, I don't do quarter stars.
Oh, it's funny, Harry.
Last for Raw, I just didn't know where to put it, so I split the difference. It was hard.
And I said to Brandon, I always wanted to do that, but I knew you'd get annoyed, so I never did.
I don't care what you guys do, it's your rating to give out.
All right, Cranky, come on, let's wrap it up.
I'm tired, I'm hungry, I need food, and we still got to do the 205 Live review after this, too, so.
And you still have to give us your thoughts on...
We're going to do that at the end of the show, so that way anybody who doesn't care what I have to say about Pittsburgh cannot listen. Okay. The reason I give the show a 7.5 is because it had two matches that were arguably the two of the better matches in the WWE this week. Raw had two really good matches in the two triple threats, and then SmackDown responded with the Styles and Cien Almas match, as well as the Shinsuke Nakamura and Jeff match, because once Shinsuke and Jeff had the opportunity to have an actual match, unlike what we saw in Pittsburgh, those two were able to deliver something very entertaining that I would put around 3.5 stars as well, much the same way I'd give the Styles and Almas match around 3.5 too. So nothing to complain about. You guys know I tend to focus my enjoyment based on what we get in-ring content, and this show was very heavy on the in-ring content, which is appreciated. One word review, Brandon, what do you have?
I'll say progression. You know, they started, you know, some feuds, they moved forward with giving us, well, a match to potentially get a number one contender for the women's title. The Jeff and Shinsuke feud, you know, it seems like it probably has ended, but they progressed the whole Jeff and Randy thing, and we'll see where they go with that. And just this was just an episode to set up a lot of different things and move things forward towards SummerSlam.
Liz?
I'm going to go with enjoyable, because I really enjoyed it. I was going to say, like, thought-provoking, but I didn't want to say I wanted to use a hyphenated word. But, yeah, it was good, you know. Can't really say much that I didn't say before with the rating, you know, and had you wondering about a few things. Brandon's right, progression is probably the perfect word. You know, I enjoyed it way more than I enjoyed Raw, way more than I enjoyed most of the pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. My word's along the same line as Brandon's, but it's a little bit more to the fact that they stayed as in-ring as they did. I'm going to go with focus. Because we're very heavily focused on what happened inside of the ring, and then by proxy, what could come out of what happened inside of the ring as well. Becky Lynch, Styles retaining, but them announcing that they're going to set up a number one contender next week. Miz and Bryan starting to pave the road to SummerSlam for their title match. Nakamura, Jeff, and Randy Orton continuing to beat the balls Mahoney out of each other. So I'm going to go with focus for my one word here. And that'll officially wrap up SmackDown. All right, so what are your guys' questions about Sunday? I know you guys did a review here on the W2M Network, available in the archives.
How was the crowd after the Asuka finish?
Quiet.
Very quiet.
Which I think might have been what they were looking for.
Yeah, just shocked. What was the crowd's reaction? I mean, I'm sure a lot of it was died down because of what happened with Asuka, but how was it with the Shinsuke AJ match? It's a very short match.
Shinsuke Jeff, you mean?
Yeah, Shinsuke Jeff. That's what I meant.
There was a lot of disappointment, especially from the little kids there. I went with my friend and her son. Her son's a huge Jeff Hardy fan, and he was very unhappy about the way that things transpired, to the point that he, like, sat in his seat pouting for a good 5 minutes after the match happened and didn't start to get back into the show until AJ came out.
Mm.
I did pretty much the same thing, actually. I was kind of disappointed.
See, I was...
It went down the way it did. I didn't mind it. I'm sorry, Brandon. I didn't mind it. I was like, okay, that, you know, it makes sense. That was, you know, funny. Or, you know, and I was glad Shinsuke, you know, won, which was the outcome I would have wanted, whether we got a 5-star match, you know, half-hour match, 15-minute match, whatever. So I was, like, slightly disappointed, you know, about it. But I was okay with it.
I'm honestly surprised. I mean, I guess, you know, they were kind of out of it already, but, you know, I was thinking to myself when it happened so quickly, okay, this is going to be the way to kind of get the crowd back into the show after completely screwing them with the Asuka match.
Well, I think the reason the Shinsuke Jeff thing went the way that it did is because of kind of what we talked about during the Shinsuke Jeff match tonight on SmackDown, that Jeff doesn't have a whole lot of matches left in him before he has to take an extended period of time off.
Excuse me.
And they figure that since the card at Extreme Rules was so jam-packed with other matches as it was already, they could let the focus for this week's episode of SmackDown be Shinsuke and Jeff in an actual contest and use Sunday night's match as more of a storyline developer rather than an actual in-ring content situation. Mm-hmm. Like, I picked Shinsuke to win the U.S. title. I did not think that it was going to go down the way that it did, but from a character perspective for Shinsuke, it made perfect sense. Why go through the excess of having to have this long extended match here when you can go to your standby, you can hit him in the balls, Mahoney, and then pick up a quick victory because mm-hmm. Jeff's not going to give up.
I feel like there was a kind of weird chant that started like towards the beginning of the show that I didn't fully know what they were chanting, but I forget what match it was during or whatnot.
Well, I can tell you one of the chants that might not have come through clear on the broadcast was during Roman and Bobby, and that chant was "We want beach balls."
Oh, okay, that might have been it. Yeah, because that was kind of early in the show. So the Roman Bobby match, the crowd was not into it at all.
Well, I honestly wasn't at my seat for the introductions. I took that opportunity once they started playing the video package to get up and go get a snack and a drink real quick. But I came back in time to see the match. The match itself was actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd was not willing to give them a chance, but Bobby and Roman actually had a pretty entertaining match. And not to mention, Bobby took a pair of man-sized bumps in that match.
Mm-hmm.
Including that almost the variation of the attitude adjustment over the top rope into the floor.
Where were your seats?
201 row F, right above the ring on the side with the hard cam, not facing the hard cam.
How was the view of the big spot of the night?
The announce table spot,
yeah,
with Kevin?
Yeah.
Diagonally looking across, I could see the announce table, so it wasn't a terrible view. At the same time, it looked like it sucked for Kevin, but upon watching it on the WWE Network, you can definitely see an airbag underneath the announce table. Mm. On one of the replays.
What was the crowd reaction to that?
Shock.
Shock.
At first. Like, a lot of screaming when it happened there. And then there was a very loud ovation for Kevin as he was being carted out that I don't know if that made the air or not.
No, I think they went to a package during him being wheeled out.
A lot of people viewed it as the Mick Foley tribute bump.
Oh, definitely. Yeah,
because the fact that this is the pay-per-view it's very close, within 2 weeks of the 20-year anniversary of the King of the Ring Hell in a Cell match.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people kind of viewed that as, I mean, from basically the top of the cage, and their cage now is about the same height that the Hell in a Cell was.
Mm-hmm.
Because their Hell in a Cell is just so much bigger now.
Yeah.
I would say Kevin was a good 15, 16 feet up in the air.
Mm-hmm. And then the big question that everyone's complaining about, what was your thoughts on the whole countdown and all of that? And did you get involved?
Okay, so there's a couple of ways to discuss this here. And I'm going to answer your second question first. Yes, I did.
Okay.
The first way that I'm going to answer the question there is people were saying that it was disrespectful to the wrestlers, that it was a sign that we were not paying attention to the match. I actually disagree with that assessment because we were following the clock for the match and the countdowns that we were doing. Now, admittedly, Seth and Dolph adjusted to the countdown and made sure to time their bigger spots right on the countdown to cause the countdowns not to happen. I don't know if you caught that or not.
No, I didn't. Like, well, after a while, it just seemed like they were, like, I know you said they took the clock down, so that was why, but, like,
yeah,
it was weird them.
I was going to get to that, yes, but go ahead.
But, yeah, it was weird when they were counting down when it wasn't on the end of a minute.
Okay, so, the earlier ones, the ones early in the match and stuff, I'm actually okay with. If we'd have done that for the full 30 minutes of the match itself, I think that they would have caused a problem because that could have been taken as a sign of disrespect.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, we were definitely focused on the latter parts of the match as well, though, buying into the near falls, counting along with the falls as they were happening there. And you'll notice more and more towards the end of the match there, like, they would wait out the countdown before they would do their big spot. The one thing that I specifically want to talk about in that regard is the superplex Falcon Arrow combination that Seth hit towards the end of the match.
Mm-hmm.
If you'll notice, originally, Seth is up on the turnbuckle with about 12 or 13 seconds left in that minute. And then I turn to the person that I'm sitting with here. Seth needs to get knocked off the ropes here, let them do the countdown, and then do the spring up into the superplex. And that's exactly what happened. Because if they would have tried to do that superplex into the Falcon Arrow during the countdown, I think it would have taken away from the effect of the move. So yeah. you could see Seth and Dolph adjusting on the fly to the crowd, which is a credit to them being the professionals that they are.
Yes.
They did take down the clock in the arena, and that is when the crowd got pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think them taking down the clock in the arena is what led to the counting at random intervals.
Yes.
The counting at random intervals I was not a fan of because that's going to screw up the performers.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not participate in those. This is the same crowd, though, that kind of revolted during the 2014 Royal Rumble, which was the last pay-per-view that was in Pittsburgh. So the fact that this happened here at the fact that this happened on Sunday night at Extreme Rules really doesn't surprise me.
Well, but, I mean, look at what happened at the 2014 Royal Rumble.
Well, even before the whole situation with Bryan and the Rumble itself, this is the crowd that turned on Cena Orton, too, in the title match.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, there's a bunch of different ways to look at it there. I understand how some people could construe it as disrespectful. My response to that is, God forbid fans have fun at a show they paid money to attend, especially when that show is approaching 6 hours long.
Did it feel longer or shorter being there as compared to watching it at home?
Some of each, actually. Like, certain matches felt longer, certain matches felt shorter. Mm. I came home and rewatched the pay-per-view. I think I told you this while we were talking about it on Day afternoon. I rewatched the pay-per-view before the reaction to get what the network saw, the network perspective of the show, in order to talk about it with Tony and Andrew on the reaction. And some of the matches on the show when I watched it before the reaction felt a lot shorter on the television feed than they were in the arena. And other ones felt longer on the television feed than they felt in the arena.
Mm.
Like Dolph and Seth obviously felt like 30 minutes because that is what it is there. AJ and Rusev felt a lot shorter than what it actually was.
In the arena?
Yeah, because those guys actually went about 15, 16 minutes, and it felt like 10. But I think that's a credit to the performance there, that they're able to have the kind of match that they had and put in the kind of effort that they put in to make it feel like the time's moving by a lot quicker than what it actually was.
Oh, what would you say was the percentage for AJ and Rusev?
60-40, AJ.
Mm-hmm.
Legit. That crowd was... There were very large pockets of the crowd. I'm sure the Let's Go Styles Rusev Day chants came through loud and clear.
Yeah, they did.
The AJ Styles Rusev Day chants. Those were maybe 60-40 towards AJ. Maybe. And it might have been even closer.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot... Like, you could definitely tell that the kids and the women were behind AJ,
mm-hmm.
where it was a lot of men chanting Rusev Day, but it wasn't like an overt angry reaction towards AJ like you would see towards like a Cena or like
a Roman. Yeah, it wasn't a Roman or Cena type chant.
Right. It's not like we were turning against Styles. It's just that we had caught onto the hoopla that was Rusev Day.
Mm-hmm.
I actually wore my Rusev Day shirt towards to the arena of the show, so. I think Liz is back. Are you with us, Liz? She's having some stomach issues, so I think she might have had to go. I don't think we're going to get her for the 205 Live review, Brandon.
Mm. I think that's just about it for me.
If she's there, does she have anything to add? Because if she's not, then obviously I'm not going to wait this out too much longer here. All right, Dead Air is not a podcast, friend, so I'm going to call it a wrap here. We got some plugs to get to, Brandon, and then we can get out of here. What do you say?
Yep.
All right, so we still have the 205 Live review to come tonight. Those will be posted right around the same time to the W2M Network, available at W2MNet.com and on YouTube, as well as all of your other podcast listening places. We talked about those earlier in the show. I'll mention them again on 205 Live. If you missed it there, you'll still be able to listen regardless. Every Monday night, Brandon Biskoping and Liz Puglisi do the Monday Night Raw review. Every Thursday night, Brandon and ? Do the NXT review. We're not sure what's going on for tomorrow's NXT review, are we, Brandon?
Not sure. That's up to Gary, you.
Well, Gary's home, but I don't know if he's come back in yet.
Yeah, well, Liz and I talked about that when it came to the Extreme Rules review and for Monday Night Raw, and we just felt to just do it, until he says otherwise, so. But we'll talk about that more later.
All right, well, we'll get in touch with Gary. We'll figure this out. Worst case scenario, I'll be back here tomorrow to do NXT in the afternoon at some point. In addition, Brandon, you have a football show coming back here at the end, on August. You want to tell everybody about?
Yeah, Fantasy Football to the Max will be coming back middle end of August. Not sure on a definitive date yet, but talking about all your fantasy football needs, top players, sits and starts, booms and busts, all that good stuff throughout the season.
In addition, the kickoff returns August 9th with our college football preview. The 16th and the 23rd are the AFC and NFC, respectively. August 30th, we will have our postseason predictions as well as our year-end award winners in advance. Obviously, we're all going to look like a bunch of morons with these predictions, but hey, give it a listen and see just how big of morons we look like here.
We should keep track of it, and like at the end of the year, we should see who comes closest.
Well, I mean, I'm going to be paying attention to it. I'm going to have the predictions up and stuff. I'll have all that stuff saved in my notebook along with the predictions for our Are You Serious matches as well. I think that's about it for us to plug, Brandon. Is it not? Oh, no, it's not. There's one more thing to plug. Guess what?
How close are you now?
I am up to my birthday, 1995.
Okay.
10-year-old Harry would be watching the February 14th edition of ECW's Hardcore TV next. It is 2/14/95, as we have the 95th episode of Hardcore TV. The next episode of Monday Night Raw that I will watch will be 2/20. The next episode in WCW's timeline that I watch is Super Brawl from February 19th of 1995. So I sit approximately 5 months-ish from the start of how the war was won. We're getting there.
I have a feeling this won't start until, like, February, because we won't want to do, like, 5 shows at once.
It's going to depend on how close I get before during football season, because football season is going to take up some of the time that I would normally be devoting to watching stuff on the network.
True.
And especially since I'm such a big follower of college football as well.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Brandon, we got 205 Live to do still. You ready?
Yep.
So for Brandon Biskobing, the co-hostess with the mostest, Miss Liz Puglisi, I'm Harry Broaders. Thanking you for listening to the W2M Network Wrestling to the Max SmackDown Live Review for July 17th, 2018. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you guys next Tuesday night.